Welcome, welcome, welcome to this 31st episode of the Pirate Monk Podcast. We're doing a little experiment this time. This episode to which you are now listening was actually pre-recorded a week before it was aired. Recorded only moments after that stellar episode number 30, featuring Glenn and Phil and the Father's Heart Weekend. I'm your host, by the way, Nate Larkin, and with me, as always, is our fearless engineer, the most reverend, Mondo.
That's the best one yet.
There you go. And we've got a special guest with us right here in the studio, in the flesh.
Yes, we do.
The Bunk is here. The David Bunker is here. Now, I got to confess, I have a little bit of anxiety because we are recording this a week before it will air.
Right.
And it's just going to go up. And who knows what might happen
between now
in
and
those then. Intervening 7 days?
Okay,
that could make this whole thing.
So there's like a little 7 day gap of just wonder.
Yeah. Sure. So I don't know what might happen in that entire week.
Well, what's your, I think Rupert Murdoch bought MSNBC. So he doesn't know what to do with most of that staff.
By the way, I am predicting a big Mexican buy-in to NASCAR. Laugh if you will, but I'm
really
Just give me a little frame of reference on like what after a bad taco you were getting a revelation or something. It's like, what are you talking about?
No, I was at Daytona last week.
Actually
2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Right.
2 weeks
right,
ago.
Two weeks ago. Yeah, not last week. 2 weeks. And, the richest man in the world, who happens to be a Mexican.
Yes, I've heard of that.
Yeah, was there. His motor coach parked right next door to the motor coach of the president of NASCAR.
Wow.
There in the lot. So...
So the Hispanic NASCAR, there'll be a world emerge from that, or how? What are you thinking?
I don't know. Maybe NASCAR will drift south. Could well be. Now, there were Hispanic fans there. I don't know. There was also a French guy who walked up to me. It was funny. I'm sitting in a golf cart outside the speed stage, waiting for Daryl to come off from doing his broadcast, and the fans are streaming by, and this guy who comes up to me, I think he's like French. And he goes, excuse me, sir. You know, that's not Spanish,
that
whatever
was,
it was.
That was
awful.
Awesome French
but he goes,
accent.
He goes, can you tell me where to buy the Ears tampons?
That was a little confusing.
The Ears tampons, I had some earplugs in my pocket, and I gave them to him.
Oh, I see. I see. Okay. Well, I used to live in L.A., and I will tell you, man, the Hispanic people do, like, they take their cars, and they do amazing things to their cars. So, you know, they had, the low riders.
Yeah.
You know, they call them low riders and stuff. And so outside, we lived in Huntington Park.
Yeah.
We were about the only Anglos in our neighborhood and stuff. So I really could see that happened at NASCAR because they
love
cars.
It makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it does make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my prediction that I don't know whether it'll happen in the next week, but I think
it's
NASCAR
possible.
Is going Hispanic.
There you go.
Okay. So this could be your next career. It'll be like, obscure financial predictions. Nate Larkin, I see... like Donald Trump investing in spiritual retreats, in the Himalayas or something. Yeah, probably not. But
probably.
Who knows,
Who knows?
Yes.
Well, I can't wait to get this conversation started. I'm not quite sure where we're going to start it, and I certainly have no idea where it's going to go, but I know it's going to be great. Thanks for being with us, Dave. We'll be right back on the Pirate Monk Podcast. And we're back on the Pirate Monk Podcast. Nate Larkin here with Mondo and Dave Bunker. Dave, you were here a week ago during our recorded conversation with Glenn and Phil.
Yes.
Talking about fathers and sons and father deprivation and its long-term consequences. What was going through your mind as you listened in on the conversation?
I was thinking a lot about how our culture lacks sacred rites of passage. Sacred meaning, you know, that they're not just like you're graduating from 7th to 8th grade, or, hey, you know, you're in Little League now, you're in high school ball. But sacred meaning, like, here's who you are in this world, and here are some spiritual ways of viewing where you are to where you're headed. You know, like, people talk about bar mitzvahs in the Jewish mm-hmm. culture, for instance, and that there's a shift in a boy's understanding when he realizes, wait a minute, I'm not just a boy anymore. There's something about me that has changed. And I think when we, in our culture, when everything is secularized, meaning all of our transitions are about earning more money, you know, getting more accolades, it's like we've created this extroverted personality. Everybody is who they are outwardly. There's no inwardness. There's no interiority. And because the interior self is a transcendent reflection, because that's the part that's made, in a sense, well, it's all made. Our bodies are too. But the interior part is the part that generates faith and generates understanding. And we don't honor the interior part. Mm-hmm. And therefore, quite frankly, we've had to give it over to therapists. And I think therapy has its role. But therapy does not ultimately, it's not a spiritual rite of passage. That is the role, I think, of religion. Mm-hmm. And I'm a Christian, obviously. And so I was thinking about how that gaze, that father's gaze, and saying, here's who I see you as, you know, and Brendan Manning talks a lot about Abba Father and mm-hmm. coming and sitting mm-hmm. in the father's lap and stuff. And for a lot of us, you know, our father's gaze wasn't welcoming.
Right.
Or in my case, it was just absent, wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And that was what I was thinking of, because I do know Glenn, and even though he's maybe not young enough to be my son, but he definitely is younger than I am, he's fathered me.
Mm. Isn't that a beautiful and wonderful and strange thing? Mm-hmm. I marvel when I look at the relationships that form in Samson, how that very often, I wouldn't say most often, but very often, mm-hmm. a man will pick a younger man to be his Silas. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, if you're the oldest guy in the room, Ed, for example, right? Yeah. Ed walks in, he's 83, he's pretty much stuck with the younger guy.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
But it astonishes me who Ed'll pick. Hmm. And then to see the Heavenly Father work through brothers to refather us, regardless of chronological age.
Yeah, I think that what Samson taught me was that spiritual fathering is not about biological fathering. Like, anybody can biologically birth somebody if you got sperm and the egg works, okay?
Yeah.
So we know that that's just arbitrary thing. Now, it's important, but my point is, spiritual fathering is not about age. It's about saying, it's no longer what's in it for me. It's like, what do I have to give?
Yes.
And so a younger man can father an older man, because I am an older man who lacks something. So if he has it, mm-hmm. then he can give it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a community of men that are in mutual gift exchange, if you
things
just start to, you know, everybody now starts to benefit, because there's a consensual, in a sense, asset management.
Right.
It's like we all get to dip into the pool here.
Yeah.
And so I want to learn from younger men, because many of them are more healed. Some of them are more knowledgeable of truths. And in many cases, they're definitely better at fixing their car or taking care of their house than me. I'm an old hippie. I just lost that ability, you know.
that's very
yeah. I love that saying in Samson, that on any given day, every Christian needs help, and every Christian has some help to give.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Dave, this is a dangerous thing to do. I don't know. I don't know whether I've got the nerve to do it. Yes, I do.
All right.
Sure, I do.
Sure, you do. We're pirates.
We're pirates.
We have the nerve.
You want to do something truly dangerous.
All right.
You ask David for book recommendations.
Ooh.
Because he reads the most wild. he's got such a wide-ranging curiosity. And it all comes under the Lordship of Christ. But he does not restrict his reading necessarily to the evangelical canon. It's one of the reasons I think that you are able to contribute so much richness to the conversation. So when we come back, I want you to, just off the top of your head, spin us, I don't know, three or four books, and then I'll go out and buy them and read them in England.
Yeah.
We'll be right back on the Pirate Monk Podcast. And we're back. David, I noticed as soon as I asked you that question, you reached into that ever-present bag and you pulled out. You're always carrying a stack of books, man. A lot of people don't. They stop carrying books when they graduate
books.
From school.
Yes.
Yeah, but he's been carrying the backpack ever since, I guess. So.
Quite immediate, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Man.
So it's book time, Dave. Yes. Talk to us.
Well, books. I will say that a lot of times people say, I don't have the time to read. And I say to people, well, actually, you waste a lot of time. And if you take a book wherever you go, I mean, how many of us sit in a dentist's office for 20 minutes waiting?
Yeah.
How many of us go to get our muffler? You sit there waiting. You go to an airport. You sit there waiting. I do not wait without a book. And so I fill it up. And then so you read a little bit before you go to bed. Because my point is that I don't think I'm a book nerd. But occasionally when I do look at my library, I go, oh, my gosh, how much of life has I sacrificed reading books? It's like, I think I need to get out and, like, play baseball or something. But books, I am really enjoying this guy, Peter Rollins. He's about a 33-year-old PhD Irish guy, a little radical. But he's written a book called How Not to Speak of God. And his whole point is that there are that we talk about God too casually, and that because of the unfathomable, mysterious nature of God and who He is, we may want to do a moratorium on how much we chatter. And I just love his approach because there is a mystical side in the sense that we need to be careful how we speak of things if we believe indeed that this God is awesome, so maybe we should choose our words. And he's written another one called The Fidelity of Betrayal. It's called Towards a Church Beyond Belief. And that's a very strange idea, that sometimes we're so rooted in the articulation of what we believe that we're more interested in making sure everything we explain is explained right, as if the explanation captures what's really happening. And he would contend, well, the explanation never captures what happens, because what is really happening is a grace issue, it's a spiritual issue, and if you're so self-conscious about how you're explaining it, you're basically saying, I'm in charge, listen to my definition, and if you don't understand my definition, sorry, God's just not going to respond.
Mm.
Well, I am glad, at least to my mind, I wouldn't want to make God that petty.
Yeah.
Why would I want God to be that small-minded? What would grace be? Isn't grace maybe that I don't have the definition right, and in spite of that, He's actually
right.
That means I have to give grace to a lot of people.
Yeah.
People I actually disagree with. Because sometimes you'll hear people say, I don't like that guy's version, and he's like real uptight, and so I'm going to be equally uptight about my version about how his version's wrong. And I'm like, how about if we just not have this discussion about how each other's versions are like the right one?
Yeah.
Maybe there is something else happening here, and it's not about the versions, it's about loving one another, it's about being in community. And I think Samson, for a lot of guys, was the first place that they felt safe enough to actually surrender to something bigger than their understanding.
Yeah.
And they weren't saying, because they had all these understandings, and for a lot of them, of course, our understanding was, man, I'm too screwed up for God to ever. And then somebody said, grace. And it's like, yeah, I understand that grace. I understand it conceptually. So you begin to realize, is it possible? And this is so weird about the fact that I, read a lot. Like, for instance, Gerald May, Addiction and Grace.
Oh, I love that book.
But, he's a spiritual director. It's not that we shouldn't learn. It's that we should, that I realize that the more I learn, the less I know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The more I understand, the more tempted I am to think that my understanding is actually how God is going to be manifest.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to do that. I want to be more open to the mysterious, paradoxical power of God and just get out of the way.
Mm.
That's why there's this book, this is a little dangerous, by Sam Keen called In the Absence of God. But he's contending that we live in a society where where you know God is so enmeshed with commerce and politics and everything that we feel more the absence of God than the presence. But is it possible that by looking at the absence as presence, maybe we can experience a part of God that we never knew before, which I think is what Christ talked about in the desert. And this is why Samson's is an important engagement, because most people in their spiritual life want to go to the mountain, but they don't want to go through the desert.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. So, right.
Well, sorry,
exactly.
Dude. You don't get renewal without brokenness.
Right. Yes.
Exactly. You don't get to the mountain unless you pass through the valley.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, most of us evangelicals, of which I am one, where it's like, well, is there a 12-part series where I can speed through, you know, like, can I fly over the desert and go, oh, wow, that is really, really bad down here. And it's like, you can always tell the guys, of which I have been, like, you know, this is a really deep wound, and I'd like to hurry through.
Yeah.
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 And it's almost like whenever I'm in a hurry, you know, it's like I'm acting as if my wound is a liability, and that's when I know, okay, I'm looking at this as a human, which I am, where when I get the gaze of the Father, He doesn't view my wound as a liability. He views it as an opportunity for His redemptive love mm-hmm. to find residence.
Mm. Yeah.
And so that's a different... He's looking at it totally different. I'm shaming myself that I can have a need.
Right, yeah.
And he's
yeah.
like, well, your neediness is not something that's shameful to me. Right. Your neediness is a reflection of the fact that you're the creature and I'm the creator. And this is what we do.
Right. Yeah.
This
yeah.
is how it works. Yeah. I never created you to shame you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm your sustenance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
no scarcity in me. You can't have enough wounds to have me like look at you right. like you're over the top.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yet, how many men are like, oh, I'm too ashamed to tell you how messed up I am.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that's why in Samson, when we raise our hand, you know, some guy goes like, oh, you know, I'm a homosexual and I do this and I've had 3 affairs and I've robbed banks and, you know, and guys will be raising hands based on some of those and they're like, no. No, you guys aren't that screwed up. You know, I remember one time, and you could ask me, Chris, but the guy came in, he's new, he hadn't been to Samson before, and he, older guy, you know, my age, I'm 60, and he said, man, my marriage is going through hard times. He's sure, he just dumped. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really, really honest. Really, really honest. So he got around to me, you know, time of confession. I said, yes, you know, I'm gay, I'm a child molester, I'm a murderer. I mean, I went through like a list of things, and I could tell he was like, holy crap, are you all those things? Well, actually, there are some of them I am. But the point was, I am all those things in my humanness, but it doesn't make any difference because that's not how I'm named.
Mm-hmm.
Those are names that don't really make any difference.
Mm.
That's a human naming. But if I can name myself that way without shame, if I, like, now it's like it can't hurt me anymore. You can call me anything you want to call me.
Mm.
You can name me however you want to name me. Because that's not how Abba Father looks at me.
Hmm.
So I'll confess that and then just get it out of the way.
Hmm.
And that's what I've seen with Samson is the power of confession. And some of the books I read is the power of words. You know, the power of words to form us and how the right words are important.
Yeah. Now,
which ones are the right ones? Well, I don't know if it's exactitude, but you know when we're in... We're in meetings where we're together when the right word fitly spoken can release a guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whew.
Yeah.
You know? You know, that's why sometimes the role playing where you take a role and you tell somebody something like, I love you, man, and like they receive it.
Yeah.
It's powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there'll be more of this and who knows what when we come back with Dave Bunker here on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Weak and wounded sinner, lost and left to die. Oh, raise your head, for love is passing by. Come to Jesus, come to Jesus, come to Jesus and live. Now your burden's lifted and carried far away, and precious blood has washed away the stain. So sing to Jesus, sing to Jesus, sing to Jesus and live. And like a newborn baby, don't be afraid to crawl. And remember when you walk, sometimes we fall. So fall on Jesus, fall on Jesus, fall on Jesus and live. Sometimes the way is lonely and steep and filled with pain. So if your sky is dark and pours the rain, then cry to Jesus, cry to Jesus, cry to Jesus and live. Oh, and when the love spills over and music fills the night, and when you can't contain your joy inside, then dance for Jesus, dance for Jesus, dance for Jesus and live. With your final heartbeat, kiss the world goodbye. Then go in peace and laugh on glory's side. And fly to Jesus, fly to Jesus, fly to Jesus and live. Fly to Jesus, fly to Jesus, fly to Jesus.
And we're back on the Pirate Monk Podcast. Dave, there was great sadness here in Franklin, Tennessee, when the news came a couple of years ago. How long has it been now since you abandoned us? I mean, since God called you back to Chicago.
About 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Going on 2 years, yeah.
Going on 2 years. And it was word got around town quickly that you were here. I heard in Starbucks that the Bunker was here and he's at the Merc, and I hurried over. You know, you're an entertaining guy, stimulating guy to listen to. I love the fact that you're an idea man, and but more than that, Dave, I love the fact that you are. You not only have a great ability to speak, you also have a wonderful ability to listen. And even now, as I'm talking to you right now, I can sense that you are paying attention, you're absorbing, you're trying to find out where I am, what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking. You're going to reflect it. You have, you know, God has worked into you the ability. I haven't known you a long time. I've known you 6 years, 7 years. But you have a remarkable ability to be present in relationship, not just in conversation, but in relationship, to a degree that's very, very rare. Would you say is that an ability that you have always had, or is that something that has come as part of your journey? Talk to me about your relationships. You're such a key man in the lives of so many men. How did that develop?
I was thinking about you know, as you're talking, I was thinking about that issue where I said about the absence of God and the presence issue. And I'm a preacher's kid. My dad was a good man, but he was always gone, mm-hmm. always speaking, mm-hmm. writing books, very well-known guy mm-hmm. in his denomination. And I'm actually a gregarious person. I like people. I mean, I'm the type of person that on a Friday night, I'll just go someplace and, you know, I'll read a book in the Kroger, you know, coffee area or something, because I just want to be around people. But part of that is because I spent my early childhood by myself a lot. Mm. And it wasn't really my choice. It was the nature of how my family was configured. And I don't know if this is a principle, but I wonder sometimes if we end up, when we're redeemed and we're in the process of being redeemed, that we end up being the gift to the community of what it was we lacked.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for me, I lacked presence. Mm-hmm. I lacked the gaze. I lacked mm-hmm. somebody going like, "Oh, I'm so glad you're here."
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You feel that way.
Yeah.
Oh, you think that. And so I long for that. So in some ways, it's not that I created God out of my own imagination. Mm-hmm. It's that that part of God is more pronounced to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel listened to by God.
Mm.
In fact, sometimes I feel so listened to by God, I don't really have to talk to him. I mean, somebody might say, "Well, are you really talkative with God?" And I go, I spend more of my prayer in silence. I don't do a lot of like, "Give me this, give me that. Could you do this? Could you do that?" And some would say, "Well, is that just meditation?" And I'm like, "No, it's sitting in the gaze of the Father."
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what happens. It's like I love you. You've been a really big part of my life. So when I'm listening to you, I'm really not even thinking about what I'm supposed to say.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like sitting there like, well, Nate's being Nate.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder what I'm supposed to say mm-hmm. other than just honor you. It's like, mm-hmm. well, you're here. That's good. Mm-hmm. And if it's important, then we say something. We had a friend that we talked to, you know, yesterday, you know, happened.
Yeah.
And I felt so honored for that he would weep in front of me.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I just wanted to create a safe place where that was okay. You know, if he needed to weep, that I didn't need to name it, talk about it. It's like if that's what he wanted to do.
Yeah,
and so I would say that for me, I long, still do. I'm growing in that. I mean, you know, this transformation from some of my physicality is because I got my mind to feel God's acceptance. Now God is saying, "I want your body." Mm. I would contend. This is a Samson issue. That if men's bodies felt more accepted by God, in God, we would have less addiction. But because we separate our bodies from God, like God's not really interested in our bodies.
Yeah.
He just wants our hearts, whatever that is.
Yeah.
I am my body. I'm this. And so all the things that my body feels, all of them, sexual, whatever, this is nothing good. God's not flipped out by that.
Yeah. Now, for our listeners who don't know you, know your story, don't have a visual on Bunker,
mm-hmm.
But the big conversation around here these days is, have you seen Bunker? And that means two things. Have you, you know, have you encountered the Bunker?
Yeah, we've encountered.
And have you seen the physical transformation in the man? At your height, I mean, what was your heaviest when you...
350.
350. And what are you weighing now?
197.
Holy smokes.
Mm-hmm. 197.
Holy smokes.
The whole person.
153
mm-hmm.
pounds?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And you did that on Jenny Craig?
I don't have a diet plan.
Isn't that awesome?
I don't even think about food.
Wow.
It was definitely, and I would attribute it to how God, with Samson Society, New Adam, some of my experiences, that, you know, just to cut to the chase, you know, significant sexual abuse as a little kid, shut my body off, didn't really think about it. During the sexual revolution of the 60s, when everybody else was, like, doing wild stuff, I wasn't.
Yeah.
I could have been a Zen monk, you know mm-hmm. I mean? I could have floated above the atmosphere. And got married, and that was always a part of our marriage. It was a struggle. I know I can say this in a holy way, and my wife understands these things. And then when I started to try to open up my sexuality, it was like opening up a Pandora's box of black crap.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I went from 0 to 60 in a week or something. What is this energy? You know?
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on. So back in the box.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you're a man and you're moderately aware of your body, it's gonna come out of the box, you know, occasionally.
Sure.
So by the time I got to Samson, I knew that like my proclivities towards addiction were evident, resident, and I needed people around me who named things appropriately, because it wasn't something I could play with. It was fire.
Yeah.
So don't be playing with this. But I had not been welcomed back into my body.
Mm.
I had, because you know what? I would say that for a lot of us men, there's a radical acceptance that we need to be welcomed back in our body, and only the Holy Spirit can do it, at least for me. I needed the Holy Spirit to say, okay, come on back in. But I will tell you, it caused me nightmares and stuff, and I've had to work with a counselor and stuff and some friends. But as I started to feel this, I began to realize my body was a gift. I'm full. Mm-hmm. Don't eat. I'm tired. Go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that. It's too salty. I don't like that. It's too sweet. Why would I want that? And I will tell you, it's almost like my body has a natural rhythm to it. It always did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think about calories.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a diet plan.
Mm-hmm.
But in a year and a half to 2 years, I've lost over 156 pounds. Now, will I have to maintain that? Yes, but I am not focused on maintaining.
Yeah.
I am focused on being present.
Yeah.
That's all.
Being present and aware, listening to your heart, but also listening to your body, which God
mm-hmm.
created. We are embodied spirits.
Right.
Yeah. And are you sensing a relationship between your spiritual health and your physical health?
Well, yeah, and I always knew that there was, and that's why I think, and sometimes with reading, you know, there would be a whole lot of what I would read that I couldn't actually apply, because there's stuff that you have to do in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell that, like, it was like, I know this, but he obviously doesn't know that. And that was another thing, too. It's like, I couldn't get my body together because I wanted to be some sexy dude or like, well, good for your health. It was like, that just wasn't a motivator.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't care. I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So the healing and the restoration or going back in my body had to be, in a sense, a grace.
Mm-hmm.
It was a grace issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm realizing that it's more about surrender than it is about trying, for me. And I'm not saying that obedience and regimen and discipline are the case, but discipline and regimen, it wasn't the motivator.
Wow.
It was surrender.
Yeah.
And it was feeling that it was okay now. It's safer to do this. And that safety I felt from New Adam, I felt from Samson, because I think we get safer and safer if we continue on to a point where the depth of our wound now can be unleashed.
Yeah, yeah. And so your physical transformation is a manifestation. It's a consequence of spiritual transformation.
It is, but I will say, and I'm still in process, it's been deeply painful, been deeply shameful, because I've had to talk about things I never wanted to talk about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've had to feel things but didn't want to feel.
Right.
I've had to admit feelings that I've had that I'm ashamed that they even came. You know, it's like, oh, crap, what is that? So I've had to have grace, because if there isn't a grace for this, what am I doing this for?
Mm-hmm.
I just as soon hide.
Yeah.
You know, everybody else is hiding.
Yeah.
You know, let me in on that class, you know?
You know?
So, I mean, you know, this is why it's kind of like, to really, truly follow any kind of 12-step or whatever you want, it's like there really is no group warm fuzzy on this. It's just like you're going to have to fill your own stuff sooner or later.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when somebody's like going, isn't it a joy to feel this? I'm like, I don't understand what you mean. No, this is deeply painful. But if you're asking me, am I now more present? Yeah, I'm more present to feel good and bad.
Yes.
Both.
Yes, yes.
I mean, there's no bliss here.
Yeah.
It's
right.
Just I'm present now.
Right.
But you know what? That's the ironic thing. If I want to feel the good stuff, I'm going to have to feel the bad stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we'll be back on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
who belong to eternity, stranded in time and weary of struggling with sin. Forget not the hope that's before you, and never stop counting the cost. Remember the hopelessness when you were lost. There is a joy in the journey. There's a light we can love on the way. There is a wonder and wildness to life, and freedom for those who obey. And freedom for those who obey.
And we're back in the Pirate Monk podcast, visiting here with Dave Bunker. Dave, you're an old rock and roller and a music guy. You taught a class on rock and roll,
the history of rock and roll at Wheaton College. But my next, that's awesome. Here's what I want to do. I want to take it to Liberty University. Now, I am on the worship board.
At Liberty?
Liberty University.
Really?
Yes. Oh, nice.
Yes, which there is a humorous irony to that. Not because I don't belong there. Uh-huh. It's just that I am there. That's the humorous irony to me, because I really enjoy Liberty University. But yeah, rock and roll. I was at Woodstock. So from Woodstock to Willow Creek, the memoirs of a dysfunctional, wounded Christian. You know, so I've seen the glory and the flame. But I still do, you know. But I'm not one of those old rockers. It's, you know, it's just like, you know, hey, Freebird for the 65th time.
Yeah,
dude, get over it. Come on. There's a couple other cuts on that album, and have you ever listened to Little Feet?
Ooh. Oh, baby.
You know, kind of a Cajun group.
They came to St. Lawrence University when I was in.
They did.
College. You betcha.
Yeah.
So you were a touring musician. Later on, you were you had a record label, didn't you?
Yeah, we had Sixpence None the Richer, Small Town Poets, The Waiting. You know, yeah, we had some.
Yeah,
really
you found some talent, didn't you?
I do like rock and roll, and that's the interesting thing about as we heal. I really believe sometimes, you know, when we meet men and they're like going like, "Yeah, I'm trying to get my life together, and I don't want to be addicted, and I want to like heal." And like, what are you doing? Like every day I'm working on myself. It's like, dude. Here, let's listen to Led Zeppelin and chill. It's like, I think you just need to, like, have some beauty in your soul. We don't nurture our soul.
Let's talk about beauty.
Yeah.
Let's talk about beauty and art. And in a utilitarian culture, and you know, in this mm-hmm. very practical, mechanistic, matter-of-fact culture, What is the place of beauty, and where does it belong in the church, and where does beauty belong in the life of an authentic man?
Well, it's interesting. I think that, you know, for a lot of guys that are listening to this, you know, maybe if they came out of the whole issue of, say, let's say sexual addictions, if you will, we know that women are beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, and for some guys, men are beautiful, and they are. Both men and women are beautiful. But when does beauty nurture us, and when does beauty, when we're like we gorging on, like, you know, banana mm-hmm. splits, you know, at 9 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah.
And so I would say in some ways the reason that our souls are so hunger for beauty is that we're famished with other forms of beauty. And so when erotic beauty comes along, we're like, wow, I feel that, I see that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and like, so we just, it's like banana splits all day. We're just eat,
yeah.
And all of a sudden you realize, holy crap, like, it's not beautiful to me anymore. Oh, exactly. Because mm-hmm. beauty isn't just the impact of the gaze. Beauty is, what does it do to you as a person over the long haul?
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people don't know what nurtures their soul. You know, they don't know that certain movies, certain books, certain music, certain pictures actually put them in a space where God is more close, where they're more open to love. I mean, how many times have you ever watched like a movie at home or something? Mm-hmm. You see it, and when you get through, you take Allie and you you just kiss her on the cheek and you just snuggle up. Why? Something happened. Some vulnerability was given permission.
Yes.
And had it not been for that narrative through that movie, that art, you just wouldn't have thought that. You had to feel it and you had to get permission. And I think I want to feed my soul with stuff that gives me permission to be more deeply human, not just trivialize me. And so, and that's why a lot of times, like, there's certain TV stuff I can't watch it, because it just makes me feel like I'm an idiot.
Yeah,
everybody in humanity is an idiot.
Right.
You know, like reality TV sometimes are like, why do I want to watch people ridicule each other for an hour?
Yeah. Exactly.
Now, I'm not putting anybody down who watches that, but what it does to my soul, it's like, it's almost anti-beauty.
Mm.
It's like, look how stupid humans are. I'm like, well, I know we're stupid, but aren't we beautiful too?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think, quite frankly, a lot of evangelical Christians, when they think about God, they don't realize that God is immanent as well as transcendent, and that beauty is actually a byproduct of God's mind in this world.
Mm.
So flowers. Mm. Sometimes people say, let's evangelize the world. I'm like, right on, man. Let's just go plant flowers wherever we can in neighborhoods and see how it affects people.
Mm.
And somebody goes, are you loopy? I'm like, I am loopy. God made the garden. He didn't make a mall, and he didn't build like a college.
The College of Eden.
Yeah, exactly. Why didn't he do the Mall of Eden?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and instead of Adam and Eve, he had Donald Trump in his board.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, no, I think God knew that there was this thing called nature. And then it's interesting how a lot of these secular guys now that are scientists, they're like, they're not believers, but they're agnostics, which means they're like, you know, maybe this God thing is like freaking me out, man, because we took this animal underwater and we dissected it and we saw it, and it was like, holy cow, do you realize how long? Yeah. I'm like, yeah, you know what? Truth is actually a beautiful thing when you look at it.
Yes.
When you look at it.
Yeah, when you look at it. Yeah.
And you see it. What am I talking about? You see science, you see the body, you see how things work. Yeah. And so a lot of these scientists now are starting to go, you know, maybe, hey, I'm going to hang out with Jonathan Falwell. So, beauty, we need it.
Yes, we do. Let's see if we can find us a beautiful song to kind of wrap this up with. I ran out on my children. And I ran out on my wife. Run out on you too, baby. I've done it all my life. Everybody cried the night I left. Almost everybody did. My little boy just hung his head. This is what I said. Sonny, I just want you to hurt like I do. I just want you to hurt like I do. If I had one wish, one dream I knew would come true, won't speak to all the people of the world. First I'd sing a song until you know I wouldn't enough. Then I'd tell you what I'd do. I'd talk to the people and I'd say, rough, rough world, tough,
everyone can understand. All over the world, sing along. I just want you to hurt like I do. I just want you to hurt like I do. I just want you to hurt like I do. Honest I do, honest I do.
I've got to admit, David, that song put me in an unexpected place. Would you call that song beauty, though?
Well, here's what I would call beautiful, is that if truth is about God and his world, and if goodness is about God and his world, then maybe beauty is. And I thought, you know, isn't that what we do? You know, we talk about it's sin, but isn't really sin, we don't say, I think I'm going to sin, but it's like, I've had a bad week, or something happened to me, somebody ripped me off, and I was like, I want you to hurt like I do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've had a hard life, man, you don't understand, and I'm not going to let you take anything from me. In fact, I'm going to protect my stuff, and I'm not giving you love, because my dad didn't give me love. Yeah. My mother didn't give me love. I want you to hurt like I do. So I'm listening to that, and I'm thinking, I'm hearing this other voice like, oh, I love that man, and I love that boy. You see that story? That story happens every day, over and over and over and over again. That's really what we're saying to each other. I want you to feel the pain I feel, and I'm going to inflict it upon you. Oh, man, I'm thinking, when can that cycle stop? How does that stop?
Yeah.
So for me, the beauty of it was I saw myself in that. I saw my own pain in that. That was my song. That was my story. But it convicted me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought, I don't want to do that to my wife, my kids, and my friends.
Yeah.
Why would I want to do that?
Yeah.
I don't want you to hurt like I do. I don't want you to hurt at all.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to do something else with that hurt. Yeah. I'm going to have to go to the Savior. I'm going to have to see what he says about it. And you know what? What did we learn in the 12 steps of the transfer of pain is what we do when we won't embrace it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We give it to our kids. We give it to our wives.
Yeah.
Sometimes we give it to them to a point where we actually physically beat them.
Yeah.
It's not just psychic pain. It's like, I got beat. I'm going to beat you.
Yeah.
So that song to me was like, that wasn't, there were people laughing. I'm thinking, I don't know if that's a funny song.
Yeah.
I think that's an existential, powerful song of what happens with a world void of redemption.
Yes.
So that's why it was beautiful to me.
I agree 100%. Well, as always, it's been an enjoyable, stimulating time. Thank you for sharing part of your life with us, David. You're here for the week in Franklin, and then headed back. I guess by the time this episode airs, you'll be back in sunny Chicago.
I do, you know, I'm working at Awana now.
Yeah.
Which I'm digging that, you know, because that's like a child and teens, you know, where we teach them scripture and teach them about discipleship. And it's so ironic that I'm now in a child doing with children.
Yeah.
Because
it's
like, you know what? It's like we wake up and we pay attention. It's like God's going like, hello. Like, the world has meaning. Just pay attention.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, so that's why, hey, let's be present. And ironically, this is what we're learning in Samson, whatever. It's like repentance is the way you can get back into being present.
Yeah.
Confession is the portal to embodiment.
Yes.
That's so true. If you want to like not be here now, if you'd like to be someplace else other than where you are, then just
hide your sin,
like don't let anybody know,
and
don't really believe that God's grace is sufficient. And if that's going to make your week, hey, go for it.
Yeah. But if you want to get into your real life and into the lives of those around you, if you want to experience all the full range of emotions that are part of this human life, then you're going to have to get honest.
Mm-hmm.
So find a place that's safe enough to be honest. Samson Society is one of those places.
Mm-hmm.
Start telling the truth. And start listening with love to other people who take the risk of telling the truth to you. Until next week, God bless you. This is Nate, Mondo, Dave Bunker, here on the Pirate Monk podcast. And that's one step at a time. Give yourself time to heal. All of my people. To renew your troubled mind. And everybody say, whoa, whoa. Put your hands up. Recovery. Say, whoa. No shame in living for real. Even if your back's against the wall, he's a day. He that is without sin, let him cast the first stone. Because my Lord has carried us all. And everybody say, can you sing? Sing it from your soul.